Dubai Eye
103.8. Time to introduce our next guest, very special guest as well, for our paper review, which we do right about this time each and every Sunday. He is a foresight strategist who travels the globe to uncover the lessons needed to uplift communities and help humanity thrive. Absolute pleasure to welcome into the studio futurist John Sarney. John, thanks very much indeed for being with us. Much appreciate your time.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And I'm sure this is not the first time you've got this one, but for all our listeners out there going, foresight strategist, futurist, explain it in layman's language to our listeners out there. What do you hope to achieve with what you do?
In order to prepare for the future, we need courage and clarity. And in order to develop courage and clarity, I categorize and contextualize the future and sort of share it in story form to organizations and decision makers so they can understand a new angle on what the future may look like in order for them to make decisions that make them feel uncomfortable. Mm. And so it really, it's about this courage and clarity. And most of us are anxious about the future because it doesn't look anything like the past. Mm. And so how do we get out of our own way to make decisions about what's coming rather than what's been?
Interesting you mentioned use the word anxiety when it comes to the future, the fear of future. Is that something that we are seeing more of these days?
Well, the more the future changes at a rapid pace, the more anxious we become. Mm. And so this default button, unfortunately, has become one of anxiousness. And so many more people are addicted to many more things because of this anxiousness. And I'm here to try and help people understand that the future requires a new perspective, a new approach, one that is multi-adaptive, one that is flexible and optimistic. The world we come from is a linear one, and the one based on the Industrial Revolution, where you could extrapolate the past into the future. And because the future is so unknown, this anxiousness becomes part and parcel of our perspective.
You're a very well-traveled man. You travel around the globe, taking different perspectives as well. Different sort of nationalities, different parts of the world have a different relationship with the future or not? Or is it a fairly global relationship?
Absolutely. I mean, culturally, we are very much entrenched in what used to be the case or what could possibly be the case. Now, in England, where you're from, everything's very staid, old boy, and nothing really changes. Don't even bring anything about the future here. We don't need anything. We've been successful for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
In Dubai, there's very little legacy, and we're inventing the future as we're moving into the future. So for me, the culture of the people, the land, the city that we're in, definitely determine how we prepare for the future, how boisterous we are, how experimental we are. And if you look at the countries that are really doing the best when it comes to preparation of the future, are the Scandinavians. Countries. They really understand this fact that we need to be collaborative. We need to be in a space of sharing rather than a competitive one that used to be the case in the sort of industrial age.
And John, I mean, the word future is something that is used a lot here. We've got Museum of the Future coming up. We've got all sorts of initiatives for the future. Does Dubai, does the UAE do the future well in terms of their preparations for it?
I think in many ways, Dubai is leading the world in many of the preparations for the future. I think Dubai is also very respectful to its past in many ways and is caught up in being respectful to the past while stretching the future. Mm. And it's this dichotomy, I guess, you know, in the transition phase between the past and the future that we find ourselves in Dubai. But very few places around the world have no past that they can talk of where we can build the actual future on a sort of clean slate. Mm. You know, I spend a lot of time in South Africa and a lot of time in Europe. And both of those places have got a incredibly deep past. South Africa has got a hurtful past that people haven't healed yet. And Europe has had a very successful few hundred years behind them. And your past success becomes your prison of innovating. You know, you can't actually innovate because you've had a past successful era. And so the place like Dubai has a clean slate, and now we can create for the future based on nothing from the past and just actually creating.
Talking of the future, we've just been having a conversation about mental health with four very honest men who came into the studio to share their thoughts, their experiences and advice, something that we weren't able to do in the recent past as well. Things are obviously changing, they're evolving. And that sort of leads us on to our first story that you've picked up on this. A Ministry of Health and Prevention launching the largest national program to integrate mental health into the primary healthcare centres. Is that one of the sort of the path to the future, is that we are seeing more transparency, more readiness to embrace the evolution in our lives at the moment?
Well, I think, you know, connection to the internet and access to Google has given us more information than we've ever had in the past. And we've been able to realize that other people are suffering from similar things we've been suffering from. And that in the past was never something that we had the opportunity to do. And now that we've got this opportunity to access other people that are suffering similar things to us and access the solutions through Google, we're now starting to open up to the fact that we are all actually human. Mm-hmm. We all have issues and we all have scenarios that need healing and need to be looked at. And in the past, men were always the ones that were strong, held the family together, went out and made the money and came back. And really what we've started to understand, maybe even the most hurt, because what has happened is that we never had the opportunity to do any sort of healing. And that lack of healing has caused a lot of pressure on the world, on the female population of the world, having to put up with men that haven't healed themselves, men that are ruining the environment because they just want to have a little bit more recognition through profitability. So this process is high time that it's come about, and I'm very happy that we're starting to talk about mental health. And as a man, I can tell you that my access to my deeper self or my mature version has gone through a lot and lot of healing that I've had to do for myself. And most importantly, what I've had to do is heal my past, my memories, and really start to understand that many people in my past that I deemed were hurtful towards me really were in their own struggle. And most of us might have daddy issues, you know, and daddy issues are based on fathers that were never given any sort of tokens or celebratory points for being emotionally aware or emotionally awake. And so I come from a daddy issue background. And for the longest time, I was so angry about it that I never got this opportunity to have a father figure. But I've come to realize that my father himself was very disturbed and had no opportunity to heal himself. And that learning and that changing of my memory, one of unconscious memories of blaming him to a conscious memory of thanking him and having empathy for him, has been a game changer for me.
It's really interesting. Just thinking about something you mentioned in there, that in this age, and we're talking about the future, we're talking about innovation, we're talking about the gig economy that we're all living in, we've never been more informed, more connected, more technically savvy. And yet, the sort of more important elements that we're talking about there are the human elements and the investment in those human elements. Do you think that's going to become more of a focus moving forward in the technical world that we live in?
Well, remember that it's because of the technical world that we've got access to this new information that's giving us the opportunity to actually talk about this thing. You know, we never had this before. So this is a fantastic opportunity for us to actually do this. But let's remember most importantly is that we find so much nationalism around the world, and obviously Brexit being one of the things, and the Trump administration in the States. This is all based on the fact that we find ourselves in a transition phase between two very different types of society. The society we come from is one of linear thinking, one of sort of competition and hierarchy. And the world we're moving into is one of collaboration, multi-adaptive, sort of networked, sharing economy sort of scenario. And so what's happened is that people are so fearful of this new way of doing things, all they want to do is go back to how it used to be, which is an impossibility, because that is, it's fake that you're going back to, because that back is never coming again. And so what we have to do is get to the point where we become adaptive, optimistic, and flexible. And the only way we can do that in this multi sort of exponential world that we're in is to heal our pasts, is to stop expecting the future to look like our pasts. And when we are comfortable with the unknown, we become naturally adaptive. And that all goes down to healing our memories and our past.
Get social and join the conversation.
Find Dubai Eye 103.8 on Facebook and Instagram.
John Sarnay is the author of the best-selling What's Your Moonshot? Magnetize and Foresight. Is also the co-founder and the chief exponential officer at Future Self Academy, an author-led online platform that connects the curious to leading thinkers. He's here with us in studio as our paper reviewer this Sunday afternoon, and we really appreciate his time. Busy man giving his time to address some of the stories that have caught his eye and our eye over the course of the last weekend. I'll let you into a little secret, John. That on Friday, I thought a couple of times about staying up for the moment of Brexit, because I thought, you know, I was on the cusp of a little bit of history,
right?
And I wanted to be there at that moment, or to witness that moment when my children in the future say, "What did you do, Dan, when Brexit chimed, etc." I'm glad I didn't. It was a bit of a damp squib in the end.
Right, right. Well, listen, I mean, I think it's the beginning of England trying to find itself again amidst the sort of Euro buzz that started a decade or two ago. Look, for me, Brexit is exactly what I spoke about a little bit earlier. We find nationalism in many different countries around the world. Germany's also there. Italy's there. America's got a whole bunch of people doing that. And it's, again, it's panic about the future.
Yeah.
And people are blaming migrants, but really it's not. It's technology. You know, migrants play a small role in the space of your jobs becoming pointless and you becoming, as Yuval Harari calls it, the useless class. And the useless class are the people that aren't willing to unlearn, to relearn a new skill set. Mm. And I pretty much think that the same thing happened when we moved from the agricultural times to the industrial times. And what started happening, and quite famously, the what they called the laggards, or what were they called, where they
Luddites.
Came? The Luddites. That's right. The Luddites. And the Luddites came in and started breaking factories and tractors because they weren't in line with what they knew as farmers. And look, we have them again, except now we have social media and the internet to share the hate and the sort of scared sort of people that aren't willing to unlearn, to relearn.
Brexit has, I suppose, one thing we can say about Brexit, and I think there's a lot of... No one really. There was that thing as well that people expected everything to change, you know, on the strike of 11 o'clock on Friday. Obviously, it's not going to change straight away. It will take time for things to percolate and filter through. But I suppose there is now a moment of clarity, because there has been a lot of confusion around Brexit for a long time.
I think it's still pretty confusing, to be honest, because you had the mayor of London posting everything about how London's still a European city while England's just left Europe. So, I mean, London's still very much in Europe, but England isn't. So I think it's just messy. I think it's just people that are fearful and not really wanting to embrace the future. And if you look at the cities and the states and the cities in Italy and Germany and England that are willing to embrace the future, they're totally against nationalism. Mm. It's sort of the Midlands and the people that are stuck in factory jobs that are fearful of it. And so what we have to do is we've got to get into a point whereby we are retraining and recalibrating people's perspectives about the future. And that's why I do what I do, because I want to give the people the opportunity to understand there is a way. We just have to go about becoming curious about it, to becoming much more adaptive towards it. And all of it is based on us getting rid of our pasts. Don't worry about your past. Your past has become quite irrelevant, because it just doesn't matter where you come from and what you did. It depends on where you're going and what you're going to do. That's much more important.
Expo 2020 Dubai on the horizon. And yet more news coming out from Expo 2020 Dubai. News out recently that it will host the next International Day of Education. Do you welcome initiatives like this?
Absolutely. I think just Expo itself and anything to do with education is really important for us to take a look at. And it's not education for children. I think even more importantly is education for adults. Mm. It's because we are, as adults, are panicking because our degrees, our doctorates, our MBAs mean less and less and less in a world where robots and young people from around the world are now becoming part and parcel of the workforce. And, you know, we're about to embark on a brand new challenge, because soon language won't be a barrier to work anywhere in the world, and you'll be able to have translation of any language into any language. And so if you thought you're having a tough time right now in your job, remember that you're about to have 2 billion people arrive onto the work scene that you never competed against. And I'm not saying this to scare you. I'm saying this to get you to begin an initiative to retrain yourself, to rethink about what it is that you're curious about and what value you could add into the world, rather than being a linear thinker depending on your education only.
Foresight strategist, futurist John Sarnay is with us here in studio. We are working through some of the stories that have caught our eyes. Let's stay in Dubai. I spoke about Expo 2020, the impact that could potentially have here in Dubai. What about the individuals being influenced by their surroundings as well? I'm going to ask you to tell me, John, about Darshan Murali, an inspiring young 16-year-old who's leading something of a green revolution in schools.
From India.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. I mean, this Greta Thunberg, also part and parcel of the process. We're starting to see a lot of the youth take up the tasks that older people aren't able to because of the sort of, I suppose, the way they've been constructed and how they think. And these youth now have an unbelievable opportunity to have big voices. And these voices are all available to us because of social media. And we're starting to see a lot of bottom-up sort of changes in society happen. I mean, if you think about it, just like 10, 15 years ago, if Oprah said something or Larry King said something, it would change hundreds of millions of people's lives. And now what you have is you have people coming from the bottom up. The Me Too movement was one that was driven from the bottom up. The Greta Thunberg and many of these sort of movements are starting to come from the bottom up. In fact, I'm writing my next book and it's very much about this responsibility we have in our own personal capacity of what voice do we want to add to the world instead of us complaining about the world and complaining about the leaders that we don't like and the economies that we don't like to partake in. What are you doing about it? How big is your voice? And these youth are just doing a magnificent job of showing us how it should be done.
This is an initiative to promote organic farming, which has begun in two schools in Dubai and Sharjah, thanks to the efforts of the 16-year-old Darshan Morali, the Dubai-based teen who studies at our own high school in Al Waqa as part of the UAE's unique Friends of Kerala community group. Fascinating initiative and fascinating point you pick up there, just the influence of youth these days. And it's something that I talk about quite often here on the show, and the growth of that voice as well. Do we run the risk of there being a sort of generational split, a generational divide now, as some of the older generations more set in their ways are not willing to listen to those voices of youth?
I think that's always been the case. Hasn't it? I mean, that's always been the case, except now it's exasperated because the voices are louder. There are no gatekeepers to who says what. You know, they don't need a radio station, a newspaper, a television to make a sound. We've got social media. We're all media companies ourselves. And thank goodness for this youth. You know, they are measuring success differently. They are understanding a world in a very different term. I call them evolutionaries. The gradual shift in the characteristics of a population is driven from the bottom up. And these youth I'm very proud of, and I back as often as I can and work with some of them in order to be able to add these new initiatives, whether it's green movements, whether it's animal anti-cruelty, whether it's just looking at the world differently through a lens that is not plastic driven. And so also there's now fly shaming. I don't know if you've seen now. So yeah. I feel pretty shameful that I'm flying again tomorrow, which is a weird thing. I used to always celebrate me flying, and now all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, I've just melted away another table size of ice sheet, you know. So they're impacting me and they're impacting us, and thank goodness that they are.
It is fascinating, and you're quite right to sort of pick up on the fact that it is that voice is now, because times were, you know, you used to, if you got into the radio, you got into the TV, that was your platform. You could have your sort of say, whereas now we in the media are very conscious that most of the pillars are generated through social media. And that is a platform for everyone, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Richard Branson made his own newspaper because he was so frustrated. I mean, that was an extreme case of somebody who wanted to have his own voice because the newspapers wouldn't let him have a voice. True, so he created his own one. So today we are all media companies. We've never had such loud voices. We've never had an ability to change behavior like we do today. And I think it's of utmost importance that we all take responsibility for the world we want to create rather than complaining about the world we don't want.
Things are changing. I think that's one thing that's a common theme through all of the stories that we've discussed today. So I want to focus again on education and this ongoing debate, John, about the role of the MBA or formal education in the roles that we've grown up with, and we're expected to sit said exams and you expect to get this qualification, etc. There is a suggestion out there that the MBA is dying in terms of significance out there at the moment. That's been countered by the director of Strathclyde Business School, UAE, Dr. Ron Bradfield, who has gone on record with the Gulf Business Magazine explaining the advantage that the degree lends when its graduates enter high-powered boardrooms. What are you saying?
I mean, look, no disrespect to him, and obviously he would say that. That's his business. He's defending it. And I think there's definitely it's an advantage to a certain extent. I think the advantage is diminishing as the world starts moving into a future that doesn't look like the past. Remember that most MBAs work off case studies of how businesses have done things and then look at how applying those case studies to new business models. I'm a faculty member at Singularity University in San Francisco, and we focus on teaching governments and organizations about the future based on the future, not on case studies from the past. So I think that the MBA needs to evolve like everything else, but I think the concept of education also has to be broadly relooked at. Remember that education very much was for creating jobs and roles in the structures of what organizations required. The very structure of an organization is changing. Mm. It's becoming flat. It's not becoming hierarchical. We have things like holacracy starting to arrive, which means that there's no managers in place. There's companies that are making decisions through meritocracy, not through democracy. And so the very structure and essence of what these roles will be in the future are shifting. So if an MBA can change dynamically to fit into what the future requires, yes. But if an MBA is teaching you on case studies on the past, hoping that you can build 2 to 3 to 5 year strategies, it's dead in the water because the world is moving at a much faster rate. And for me, the biggest education that you could do is something that you're curious about, because your curiosity is your signature. And your signature makes you unique in the world. You can't be a person that's getting great value back from society when you're just like everybody else. Mm. Because you need to become unique and authentic in who you are. And then the world starts celebrating who you are, because you want to move away from a place of competition into a place of collaboration. But you can only collaborate when you're unique. You can only compete when you're like everybody else.
Which is really interesting. It goes back to this sort of wider conversation about education. I want to ask you about that, because you became Africa's first faculty member at Singularity University in San Francisco, as you mentioned. Yes. You also lecture at Duke Corporate Education in Joburg. Yeah. You're a partner associate at Copenhagen Institute of Future Studies in Denmark. Three very different parts of the world.
Yes.
I suppose it goes back to my question to you about our relationship with future. Is our relationship with education and our approach to education changing wherever we are in the world?
Well, look, I think, as far as education is concerned, it's becoming globalized, because we are now competing against global people,
okay,
on that level. Because your job competition is not coming from your local, national anymore. Now you've got a global sort of market. The reason those three are so diverse and why I actually went to become part of them and now am part of them is that they do very different things.
Yeah.
Singularity University focuses on exponential technologies, and it's awesome to watch those technologies shape and shift society. The Institute for Future Studies in Copenhagen looks at societal shifts, as how we are changing as human beings and how we are interacting with technology.
Mm.
And then Duke Corporate Education looks at how we apply new ways of managing in disruptive manner inside our organization. So for example, the way we used to run our organizations, where we used to think about innovation as being very important, I think is coming to an end. And let me explain why. Innovation is doing what you always did, just a bit better. And in a world that's changing so dynamically, that isn't often enough, because that process worked really well when we lived in a world of supply and demand. The business model has shifted from supply and demand to curate, match, and facilitate. Now, if I give you a quick example, is Spotify. They curate music, they match it to your personal taste, and they facilitate to you for $5 a month. Now, think of a supply and demand business where you used to go buy a CD, or iTunes launching 99 cents a song. It seems so archaic.
Mm.
Now, if you think about a business that is stuck in supply and demand, which is just innovating for the sake of innovating, Gillette, who went from one blade to two blade to three blade to four blade to five blade to six blade to seven blade, they lost $8 billion last year.
Mm.
And at the same time, a brand with one blade called the $1 Shave Club sold for $1 billion. Why? Because they understood curate, match, and facilitate.
Mm.
So as far as leaders are concerned, are you running your businesses based on yesterday's doing things just a little bit better? Or do you have a parallel business that's creating disruptive business models? Now, disruption is fundamentally different to innovation. Innovation is doing what you did yesterday just a bit better. Disruption is making your current business model obsolete to create a new one.
Mm.
Now, you can't disrupt yourself, because how do you make yourself obsolete? And so what you have to do is you have to now run parallel businesses where you're creating businesses for tomorrow while you're keeping your current business vital. And what most businesses do is they make their employees schizophrenic, because they ask them to keep their current business vital and be disruptive, which is almost impossible.
Been in conversation with John Sarnay, the futurist, here in studio, working through a couple of the big stories of the week. It's prompted a lot of thoughts out there, and that's good. You know, we encourage that. We encourage your thoughts thoughts and opinions. Praveen's been in touch with us, John, saying this. Not sure if I completely agree with comments about the past. Goes on to say that future is built from the past, and what is past plays a role in the future as well.
I'm more than happy for people to disagree with me. That's great. I think many opinions are great for debate. I have found that when you have healed your past, you stop the patterns reoccurring in your life. Mm. And when you're able to recreate your future based on a clean slate, you get an opportunity to build from scratch rather than pulling sort of past ideas and concepts with you. If you look at the business that are being built today that are achieving billion-dollar status, they have zero legacy from the past. The businesses with legacy from the past are crumbling in front of our eyes. So I'm sure she can also give us examples that are different, or he, but for me, what I'm watching around me is the sooner you can get rid of your past, the sooner you can create the future based on the new rules that the world requires.
Final piece that caught our eyes was this piece about the future workforce. It was published in Arabian Business online and, of course, their print edition, Turning Possibilities into Realities for Students. Why we are all responsible for shaping our future workforce. Does it need shaping at the moment?
100%, of course it does. I think, again, remember, we are now living in a world where we have access to more information than ever before. Mm. We have YouTube giving us an opportunity to entertain us for almost nothing. We have the opportunity to communicate with the rest of the world for almost nothing. Mm. What we have to do is become responsible for what we are curious, excited about, shines brightest for us in the world, and for us to dive deep into informal learning to get to a position whereby we are able to add value to the world based on our passion, our excitement, and what we like the most. Now, I can tell you this because of my career. I never went to university. I now lecture at universities, and the reason that I've been able to do this and be invited to be part of universities is the fact that I'm incredibly fascinated with human psychology, quantum science, future studies, and strategy. And so nobody forces me to dive deep and educate myself. Nobody forces me to write books on them. Nobody forces me to put keynotes together for them. But because of my fascination, I've become a specialist and a thought leader in them. And so my sort of push for people is, look, the future requires us to become individuals, and in this individual capacity, we have our own curiosity, and we should dive deep into that. That curiosity is not by mistake. It's what you're here for. As Mark Twain said, he said, the two most important days of your life are when you're born and when you find out why.
Now there's something to take through the rest of the day. See if you can't work that one out by the end of the day. John, unfortunately we are out of time. We will definitely get you back into studio next time you're back from your travels. You're off on your travels fairly soon, are
yes,
you?
Tomorrow. Good. Shameful of me to be flying, but yes, I am.
don't beat yourself up. Don't beat yourself. You've got to get there. You've got to get there,
yes,
somehow.
Yes, I do.
Can't swim.
Yes, not yet.
Yeah. Right. Big thank you to you for being with us. Listen, John, before you go, though, if people want to find out more, if there are people, we've got a load of comments coming through, a lot of people agreeing that people not disagreeing, others are sending their comments. If people want to continue this conversation with you, where can they find out more?
Yeah, sure. Listen, I'm very lucky that out of 7.5 billion people in the world, I am the only John Sarney, thank goodness. So, JohnSaney. I have a website. I share a lot on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook. So please join me on the conversation. I'm more than happy to have debates with people as long as you're not rude. Then we can debate, no problem.
Good on you, John. Bless you. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Really nice to meet you. Thanks to John for joining us live in studio.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.